Next year, students in Alabama may start learning more about evolution and climate change. The State Board of Education voted unanimously today to adopt new science standards, the first change in a decade. Some teachers say the standards they work with now were behind the times the day they were approved. In Birmingham, Dan Carson of member station WBHM reports on their reaction.
Here in Alabama, biology textbooks have warning stickers that call evolution a controversial theory. The state science standards say students should, quote, wrestle with the unresolved problems still faced by evolution.
You might not accept it, but that doesn't change the fact.
Science teacher Ryan Reardon is not a fan of the current standards.
Talking about evolution in a classroom is controversial, but there is no controversy about how all the organisms on the planet are related to each other.
Reardon teaches at Jefferson County International Baccalaureate, one of the nation's best public schools. He also helps write textbooks, and he and other science educators say Alabama's current standards are dated and thin on evolution. Not so the new standards, which call it established scientific knowledge.
We are really pleased to see that.
Minda Berbeco is program director for the National Center for Science Education.
So I think we're cautiously optimistic that the Board of Ed moves forward with this really positive pro-science perspective.
All of the nearly two dozen Alabama science teachers I heard from want that too. So, on evolution, new standards versus current, unofficial survey of teachers says real improvement. But what about that other little science subject that connects life on Earth? Here's Ryan Reardon tackling climate change in his senior ecology class.
Water, what else?
CO2.
Thank you. Lord of mercy.
The thing is, this isn't a typical lesson in Alabama. The current standards barely mention climate change.
I just don't think it's taught.
One reason for that, says Reardon,
climate science is not something that a typical Alabama science teacher is going to have had as part of their training.
Minda Berbeco says there's another reason it isn't taught widely.
We've certainly worked with plenty of teachers who are really concerned about pushback just for teaching the science.
The three-year run-up to these new standards, though, has been oddly light on pushback. One reason? They have the official backing of the Alabama Science Teachers Association. Also, at public hearings where citizens could voice their concerns, the state required comments to be about specific standards. Critics couldn't just oppose the whole effort on principle. One more possible reason for the lack of controversy, while the new standards have a little more on climate change, they still don't say humans are a cause. Minda Berbeco's diplomatic.
You know, I always feel like standards could be even better and they could incorporate more concepts and more ideas, but this is a great starting point.
The new standards do make a big change in a third area, the doing of science itself. There's more focus on hands-on exploration, unifying concepts like cause and effect or structure and function, and a favorite of Ryan Reardon's, data analysis.
I'm going to let the data smack them in the face. I'm going to ask them what that suggests, and then I'm going to ask them what the ramifications are.
This may be the biggest selling point among teachers. Here's State Teacher of the Year Jennifer Brown at a recent public hearing.
So with the new standards, students are going to be able to experience science and not just solely learn about it from a textbook, lecture, or worksheet.
So, on doing science, new standards versus current, educators say real improvement. And they hope the emphasis on process and thinking will help kids better grasp all subjects, politicized or not. For NPR News, I'm Dan Carson in Birmingham.
Teaching subjects that trigger strong emotions and political divides is challenging. In the South, some of those fault lines, racial, religious, and otherwise, are tied to history. This week, the Southern Education Desk explores how teachers tackle tough topics. WBHM's Dan Carson starts with an overview of some of the challenges and the ways around them. Please note, this report contains language some might find offensive.
You're about to hear University of Alabama students in a video reacting to racial incidents there and elsewhere.
It's feeling and knowing that people have the convenience of ignoring the complexity of your identities. And oddly enough, the moment in which you don't feel quite invisible is when the group of fraternity guys drives by in their truck on a Saturday night yelling, "Roll Tide, nigger."
That's Student Government Association President Elliot Spillers. Senior Amanda Bennett says she spent college in a pro-Confederacy environment.
I go to class in buildings that are named after white supremacists, eugenicists, and slave owners.
Now let's be honest, hearing that puts some people on the defensive, and many others are at least surprised. Why? How did we get here? I ask historian, educator, and author Robert Corley if the relevant history is being taught well.
Well, no.
On the same question, Birmingham 8th grade social studies teacher John Mark Edwards.
There's a lot that's not talked about, not discussed. Sometimes administrators are interested more in status quo or easy, or in my opinion, there's a push in our culture to be politically correct at the expense of talking through really tough issues.
Another history hurdle, the dominant group's view has been around a long time, but other sides of the story have only recently been expressed and studied. And says Corley,
public education, the way it was structured in this country, was designed in part to not only educate students about skills that they needed, but it was also designed to indoctrinate citizens.
He says textbooks mainly include virtuous white men doing things on certain dates, and that the materials often taught not by historians, but by people who learn that brand of history. Combine that with teachers running out of time before key units.
If you do go to college, then you begin to get a little bit richer and more complicated view of the past, and it's oftentimes shocking to people. You're going to hear about topics like slavery, the removal of Indian tribes, an enormous amount of violence in the American past.
But since not everyone goes to college, teachers like John Mark Edwards are even more important.
And you did not make it up today.
He studied resistance to school integration in Birmingham for his master's in history. He's also nationally certified, won teaching awards, and he coaches, so he's earned some leeway. And his subject isn't standardized tested.
I've had a lot of freedom to veer off track, to challenge students. You can dive deep and really it can be applied to today.
His student Israel Mason says she appreciates the approach.
It helps to know where you came from and know what process that people went through to get you where you are so that you don't repeat the mistakes that they made and you can repeat the good things that they did.
And for her, that history is about as real and personal as it could be.
I come from a biracial family. Before, like when segregation was around, I wouldn't be here. It wouldn't be legal.
She's making those connections literally inside history at Birmingham's Phillips Academy, where people were beaten and stabbed trying to enroll black students not even 60 years ago, a chapter some students are never taught. For the Southern Education Desk at WBHM in Birmingham, I'm Dan Carson.
This week we'll have much more on teachers tackling tough topics, including tomorrow's report on teaching Islam in Tennessee. This series is supported by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You can learn more at southerneddesk.org.
Unidos Dual Language Charter School is in the flight path of Atlanta's airport. It looks like a growing number of America's public schools. It's a little run down, and its students are brown. A little more than half African American, just less than half Latino. 90% are on free or reduced lunch. But what's happening inside its pre-K through 8th grade classes is not typical of the U.S. or the South. That was second grade teacher John Rendon with his Latino and African American students making a joke that pretty much all the kids got. Speaking of African American kids who get Spanish, fourth grader Gabriela Washington is clearly amused by mine.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Muy bien, ¿y tú?
Bien.
But I want to test her a little more, so I ask her favorite subject.
Matemáticas.
¿Por qué?
Porque es muy fácil.
So you think it's easy, huh?
Yep.
Okay. I talked with other kids like Gabriela, some even younger, who were just as bilingual. In a mainly monolingual country where many black students face educational opportunity gaps, it surprises people.
To see an African-American child walk up to you and speak in fluent Spanish It takes them off for a minute, but then they smile.
Unidos parent and PTA president, Tony McCreary.
Do you get weird looks or questions from friends of yours or just people in the community like, wait, your kids are learning science in Spanish?
Yeah, quite often. But then I also let them know, well, my wife being Spanish, my kids are blackish. So this is what they need to learn.
But he's even more enthusiastic about benefits he sees for all the students.
Being a former college director of recruitment, I understand that if there's something different you can add onto your resume, then you say, okay, this kid attended a dual language school? Yeah, that's somebody we really want to look at and bring into our institution.
And research shows benefits not just for English speakers. Here's a counterintuitive concept. If you teach language minorities core subjects in their native language, they do better in school, including learning English. In other words, teaching, say, Latino students math in Spanish often leads to better overall performance and better English compared to kids in English immersion programs. Unidos School academic coach and parent Jeannie Meyer sees it with native Spanish speakers and native English speakers.
If we immerse our students so that they can manage that language before going into content, they fall further behind. And students that learn in the language may start off with some lag, but eventually they catch up and they do really well versus having 2 or 3 years of nothing, only language.
The reasons kids eventually have better English after being taught core subjects in Spanish are complex. They have to do with brain development, having knowledge and concepts to attach words to, and getting language minorities to buy in. And Meyer says that includes parent involvement.
It's a lot easier for those parents to say, can I help you with something? I can do your bulletin board in Spanish because I can't do it in English.
The way schools teach in two languages varies, but basically students learn literacy and content in two languages with at least half their instruction in the non-dominant language. In the U.S., that's usually Spanish. The approach seems to be working for fifth grader and aspiring science teacher Melissa Padron, and maybe even for her parents.
Are you teaching them English at home?
I am, because my dad works at this company. Sometimes he gets like emails or letters and he asks me, what does it say? I help my mom and dad.
When you can help your own parents, how does that feel?
I technically feel like a mini teacher.
Unidos School's test scores are decent, about average for the demographics. But kids are becoming bilingual, so dual language education is apparently not a zero-sum game. And of course, there are things standardized tests don't measure. Gabriella Washington tells me bilingual people get better paying jobs, and she wants to travel the world with an Unidos classmate.
My best friend is from Panama, and she says it's a really nice place.
For WBHM in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Dan Carson.